two biggest ride-hailing apps, Uber and Lyft, race to debut on the stock market this year. Sources tell Reuters the much smaller Lyft is planning to pitch itself to investors as the one that's growing faster. Both companies filed for an initial public offering on the same day in early December, but Uber remains the undisputed king of ride-hailing in terms of size. It announced on Friday that its full-year revenue for 2018 rose 43% to $11.3 billion.
Cracks are starting to appear in what has been a solid U.S. economy. A slide in retail sales in December was the biggest of any month since 2009. Sales were down across the board, even online sales nosedived. Some are dismissing that as a fluke because December was a terrible month for the stock market and what kind of effect that would have on consumer psychology.
After unveiling the locations of its new headquarters with much fanfare, Amazon is now reconsidering whether to put a new campus in New York because of local opposition. That's according to the Washington Post on Friday, citing two people familiar with the retailer's thinking. The Post, owned by Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, reported the company had not yet purchased or leased any land for the project in New York.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's February 18th. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Here we are getting ready to go on another business day and another business week. Lots going on in the world. We're going to update you on the market situation. We have some business news to share with you as well. And on the program today, in our CEO Spotlight, the president of Harper College in Palatine, Dr. Kenneth Ender will join us momentarily here to talk about how community colleges play such an important role in the economic survival and success of a community. Dr. Ender, again, momentarily this morning. A little bit later in the program, Frances Vergunst will be here. She is a fellow at University of Montreal. We're going to talk a little bit about how boys who grow up with one socioeconomic status might have problems later on in employment as an adulthood. And that'll come up at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, where markets in the United States are closed today for the President holiday, President's Day. Financial markets closed in the U.S. That means no trading on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. When trading resumes tomorrow, investors will be watching the Dow after it soared nearly 450 points on Friday, marking its eighth straight weekly gain. That's the longest streak since November of 2017. Not to be outdone, the NASDAQ also posted its eighth consecutive weekly gain. Markets are open around the world this morning. In Europe, the FTSE and the DAX in Germany are lower by about 0.25%. And in France, the market is higher. In Asia, the markets are higher as well, with the Nikkei going to finish the day up 381 points. That's almost 0.75%. The Hang Seng in China up nearly 446 points. That's about 1.5%. And the Shanghai up nearly 2.5%. Oil is trading at $55.97 a barrel, which is up about 40 cents. Couple of stories before we begin this morning. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says Amazon took their ball and went home. He made the comments on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday while talking about the failed deal between Amazon and New York City. He says he has no problems with his fellow progressives critiquing the deal or wanting more from Amazon. The mayor says it is an abuse, an example of an abuse of corporate power. De Blasio says Amazon had an agreement with the people of New York City but left them high and dry once there were criticisms. Southwest Airlines is facing a run on grounded jets, and the company is threatening to fire mechanics who don't show up for work. On Friday, Southwest told mechanics it's experiencing what it called an operational emergency. In a memo CNBC reported yesterday, Southwest also told mechanics that they'd be assigned overtime and that they needed a doctor's note when they returned after missing work because they were sick. If they don't, they could be fired. Southwest has had twice as many grounded jets as usual since last week. The airline and its mechanics have been negotiating a new contract since 2012. Front and center this morning, the president of Harper College in Palatine. Community colleges play a major role in the economic vitality of a region. That's exactly what's happening with Harper College. And there's lots going on there as well. Harper has also just named a new president. This morning, we're happy, though, to have the outgoing president with us. Dr. Kenneth Ender is here. Dr. Ender, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you in. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on at Harper and sort of what's happening in the search for your replacement. Lots of things to cover this morning, but I wanted to give our listeners just sort of a snapshot of what Harper is, what it's all about, who are the students there, that sort of thing.
We would describe Harper as a comprehensive community college. We offer programs extending from the liberal arts down to the trades with respect to skills training. An institution that has probably a student body that the average age is 28. Probably 7 out of 10 of our high school freshmen who go to college end up at Harper within a year of their graduation from high school. Population of students that is increasingly becoming Hispanic. Will probably become an Hispanic-serving institution within a year or so. That's 25% of our student body would be Hispanic. We run 7 days a week. We're a busy institution.
So what are the benefits and also the challenges of that population and those statistics?
Well, the benefits far exceed the challenges. To be in a class of students that is so diverse, both respect to age, ethnicity, background in school, and reason for being in college, to put that mix together in our classes creates a real rich dialogue between the students and the faculty members and the community that gets developed. The challenges, they come at so many different levels of readiness. So you might have a high school freshman, a college freshman coming directly from high school that has done superior work in math. That person might be in class with a returning adult student, a 45-year-old woman who's come back after 20 years to upgrade her skills, and she hadn't had a math course in 20 years. Mm. So she's got to struggle to get to where she needs to be so she can compete in that classroom. Our faculty really need to work hard to address all types of different learners and their needs.
The college, Harper, has been privileged to have you there leading the ship for quite a number of years. Talk to me a little bit about your tenure and your successes over those many years. How are you leaving the university, the Harper College, in a better situation than when you left, when you got there?
You might be asking the wrong guy, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think if you look at the metrics of our institution when we started and where we've come as a team 10 years later, certainly our graduation rates have increased by 12% in the last 10 years. We started, if you were a freshman coming directly from high school, you were one of 62% of those students who took a remedial math course. That same freshman today, 40% take a remedial math course. We have developed a very diverse curriculum over on the career and technical education side of our college so that more and more students who traditionally have not seen a liberal arts education as a route for them to go, they now come to our college to pursue manufacturing or HVAC or information technology, whatever it might be. Not so high on a lot of people's lists, but very high on the president's is the amount of money we raise from the philanthropic community. We started with about $3.5 million in raised funds. We're now at $23.5 million 10 years later. Really will provide my successor an opportunity to do some extraordinary things. You know, public institutions are funded to be ordinary. To be extraordinary requires a private purse, and we've been able to tap into that.
And you also have been, the community's response to Harper has been positive. You went to voters recently to ask for money and won. I know that was a lot of hard work on your part, but it also speaks to how the community views the college and their endorsement of it, doesn't it?
It does, and we were very proud of the response we got from the community. We were requesting, with no tax increase, we could finance another $180 million of capital bonds to put back into the preventive maintenance and deferred maintenance and some new building opportunities for the college. If you look around at higher education today, particularly in the public domain, what you see is a lot of crumbling facilities, weak infrastructure, because there just has not been a source of funds to support public institutions in their capital needs. Harper has been very fortunate to be in a community where the community sees this as an investment that they're willing to pay not only upfront money for, but long-term money to maintain.
And just an investment. The community also sees you, sees Harper as a partner. This is going back many years in the Northwest suburbs. A wonderful relationship with employers because they know that you're training the folks that will come work for them.
That's the community and community colleges.
Yeah.
A community college at its best marries three themes: workforce development, economic development, and talent development. And so the extent to which we can work successfully with our business and government community to determine where the emerging workforce needs will be with respect to economic development opportunity that we're trying to nurture, that should be our sweet spot with respect to the kind of skills development that we're working to do. I would say to you, just recently we convened, now 4 years ago, we convened a series of meetings with our school superintendents and a number of our business leaders. And we asked the question, tell us the kind of student you'd like to have as a school superintendent. Tell us the kind of an entry-level employee that you'd like to have as a person who hires. Answers, remarkably, were about the same. They said, give us a person who shows up on time. Give us a person who works at a quality level that doesn't have to be repeated by somebody else. Give us a person who finishes what they start, who's not afraid of hard work, and gives something back to the community. That'd be the kind of student we'd like to have. That'd be the kind of employee we'd like to have. So we ran with that and have developed what we call the Harper Promise Program. So now every freshman in our high school, 7,000 of them each year, are eligible to apply for and compete for a Harper Promise Scholarship, which simply asks them to practice those good habits over the course of 4 years in high school, meet the metrics that have been established. And I would say they're scrappy C metrics, the kind that I probably could have gotten through when I was a high school senior, but one that actually prepares them to go to work and prepares them to be successful in post-secondary education. We scholarship all of those students 4 years later.
So that's called the Promise Scholarship. Students get into their, are students invited into that, or do they apply?
Every high school freshman and their family is oriented to this program in the eighth grade of their middle school. When they come up into their freshman year, the first semester of the freshman year, we're socializing that program with them and their parents, and then they can sign up for it by December of that first semester and become a participant in that January of second semester.
It's hard to look at headlines every morning and not see a story about the skills gap and the growing gap. As we move forward with our economy, more folks are going to be perhaps put out of work because of automation and technology. Talk to us a little bit about that part of Harper's mission, getting people ready for the changing economy.
Right. Well, economy has changed, and I'm afraid too many people still don't realize that. It's almost impossible for you or I to define a job today in America that would provide a middle-class lifestyle to a person who had it if that job didn't require some post-secondary education. And I'm not necessarily talking about a baccalaureate degree, but I'm talking about some credential that a person can trade with an employer, and the employer recognizes that credential as having economic value. We have far too few Americans in our country who understand that without that post-secondary credential, you really don't have a place in the 21st century economy. Today in America, between 4 and 5 million kids, 18 to 24, are either sitting at home, not in school, not having a job because they don't have that kind of post-secondary. So we've been working hard to help parents particularly understand high school is necessary, but it's not sufficient. You must find a post-secondary route that will provide you the opportunity to take a skill set to an employer that you can then advance in the rest of your career.
The stats are millions of job openings every year, right now even.
7 million to be exact in this country.
Even in this tight job market, yep. It speaks to a lot of things. One is to have those skills ready for manufacturing, nursing is another one.
That's why we really tried to nurture a very strong apprenticeship program at the college. You know, apprenticeships historically have been associated with the trades. And what we are determining is that there are a number of white-collar industries that are now looking for us to work with them to establish apprenticeships because, again, the technical side of the work has changed. A great example is insurance, of all things. Right now, we run probably the largest apprenticeship program in insurance in the country, with Zurich Insurance. Mm-hmm. Historically, they have hired baccalaureate prepared students, brought them into their insurance program, and found pretty quickly that about two-thirds of them don't stay with it. They didn't like insurance. They didn't go get a baccalaureate to do insurance. So what they've done now is said, let's go to community college. Let's offer a two-year opportunity. Actually, Zurich is a three-year opportunity. We'll pay for an apprentice to come and work with us 3 days a week, learn the insurance industry, 2 days of work at Harper College. It's a very early experiment for the student. If they don't like to work, they know pretty quick, and the company has not invested time and money. So we're finding this to be a very common approach now with insurance, with finance and banking, logistics and supply chain management, retail, graphic arts, just to name a few that we've got going at the college as we speak.
That's a pretty good recipe. Is that what it's going to be moving forward to? Because I've heard some people say this is not something that the private sector, private companies and schools can handle on their own, that there maybe needs to be some sort of government intervention in funding the retraining of America's workers. Are you optimistic about that?
I'm not optimistic that government's going to fund those programs. I am optimistic that government will provide seed money or catalyst money to help institutions and businesses get started. Much like the federal government, when we started our work with Zurich, we received a $2.5 million startup grant from the Department of Labor to really stand up this program. I think more of that kind of catalyst money will be available across the country.
What do you say to the older segment of students that are coming to school? It must be pretty difficult, isn't it? They're faced with perhaps being retired already, and now they have to retrain for something else, but they're going back into what could be an intimidating sort of atmosphere.
Welcome back.
Yeah, exactly.
What we struggle with adult students, is try to find an architecture for our delivery of our programs that match their life, the architecture of their life. And what we know is most adult students can't come back and get on a regular college schedule. They probably are working one or two jobs just to keep the payments going. So we're needing to not only shift the way in which we provide a platform that for them to learn from, but we also need to help those adults who probably are not familiar with a lot of the technical apparatus they need to be familiar with to actually be successful on those platforms. That, I think, is a real challenge for the country, frankly, in retraining, re-educating adult students, and one that we're taking very seriously at Harper College.
I think it speaks to how much the university community appreciates what you've done, that you've been involved in helping find your successor. Talk to us a little bit about what is going to be the best candidate that is selected for that job.
Boy, that's such a great question, and the board has really worked hard to try to identify a profile of an individual that would be successful at Harper College. I mean, clearly, they're looking for folks who have previous experience in presidential roles. Harper is a fairly sophisticated and complex institution with a very serious budget, both on the educational side and on the operating side. So a sophisticated manager, but also an outstanding leader, and a leader who wants to focus on the outcomes of the student experience. You know, the management side of the business, keeping the place looking well, opening up on time, closing down on time, making the right call when it snows out, whatever those things might be, they've got to be done really, really well. Because if you don't manage well, you can't lead well. I think the board recognizes that. So they're looking for an established leader, someone who's already demonstrated that they can do these things, and then someone who actually gets very excited about watching students walk across the finish line at graduation. Our numbers right now, we have about a 39% graduation rate. That's good. In the field, that's probably better than average. We need to be at 45-50% to really be outstanding, and I think that's where this board wants to go.
In the best case scenario, what kind of school do you hope Harper is 5-10 years down the road?
Well, that's such a great question. Well, I think that to be a comprehensive community college in the 21st century economy will probably mean, at least at minimum, a much more robust partnership with our local high schools. We have a good one now. We're really proud of it. But we need to be joined at the hip on almost everything we do with respect to providing our young people with a lifetime of educational opportunities that are not that are seamless, that work well together. So we need to get better at that. I think we've got a good start. As I said, our graduation rates need to get better. I think the ways in which we offer our platform of content to our students need to be more diverse than what we have right now. So those would be some of the outcomes I would look for.
Dr. Ender, great meeting you. All the best to you and everybody at Harper College.
Thanks so much, Steve. Thanks for having us on the show.
Dr. Kenneth Ender, president of Harper College in Palatine. The school recently announced the hiring of Dr. Avis Proctor as its next college president. A unanimous vote was taken on February 13th at the committee of the whole meeting. Dr. Proctor will become the sixth president of Harper College on July 1st, succeeding Dr. Ender, who's ending his 10-year tenure at that institution.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Disruptive behaviors in kindergarten associated with employment earnings in adults in adulthood for boys. We're talking about ages 30 maybe to 36, 35 to 36. The latest study information is out on this. We're happy to have with us Francis Vergens, a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Montreal, the research unit on children's psychological maladjustment. Francis, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Hi, thanks for having me on the program.
I want to talk a little bit about the overall findings of this. What kind of behaviors, disruptive behaviors, are we talking about?
Okay, so we're talking about inattention or the ability to pay attention, particularly in a classroom setting. So all these behaviors were rated by teachers when the children were aged 6 years. And the key ingredient here that seems to be linked to lower earnings 3 decades later is inattention. And that was assessed based on traits like the child, is it distracted, has his head in the clouds, cannot pay attention to classroom tasks for very long. And then the other interesting finding was that we also found pro-social behaviors. So traits like whether the child's helpful, they support other children when they're upset, they're considerate, they share their classroom materials. Those kinds of positive pro-social behaviors were associated with higher earnings at age 35, 36.
The study here has been following these kids for 30 years, right?
That's right, yeah. So the study was started in the early 1980s, and these kids were interviewed for the first time in 1984 when they were in kindergarten. And then they were followed up each year and assessed on a wide range of behavioral and social and cognitive assessments. And one of the things we do in the study as well is we also try to control for other background factors, things like the child's intelligence and the family socioeconomic status.
And when you say that, what do you mean by that?
You might find that children who have high who are inattentive earn less when they're older, but that might simply be a correlation between intelligence and attention. And so what we're saying is that if you subtract inattention, if you subtract IQ or intelligence out of the equation, we still find that attention is an important predictor of future earnings.
So, Francis, what is the study? What has it given us in terms of information to perhaps change the scenario as young people grow and become earners?
Yeah. So I think one of the things of important implications to think about is that we shouldn't necessarily say that, you know, parents need to rush out and tell the kids to pay attention and be nice so that they can earn more money. I mean, there are other good reasons to pay attention and be nice, of course. But what we're saying is that the least well-off kids, the kids that had the most problems paying attention, and the kids with the sort of lowest levels of pro-sociality, they're the ones who we should try to target with interventions and support, and in a way bring up that floor for those most disadvantaged kids.
And so then the teacher ratings are important here as well. Message, the learning part of this for them would be what?
So kindergarten is a good time to start screening. Teachers have really relatively good sense of behavioral problems, like inattention, hyperactivity, aggression. It also allows, since most kids attend kindergarten, it also allows for almost population-wide screening. And so they can start to identify children who have early behavioral problems, particularly inattention, mark them for potential support and intervention if necessary.
I know there's a lot of attention paid to, you know, how we perhaps medicate children when they have these mm-hmm. Disorders. How does that play into all of this?
I mean, if it were appropriate, depending on the particular the child and the context, if they have a formal diagnosis of, say, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, then you might want to consider medication in those cases. There are also a wide range of other interventions, including school and home and family interventions that can also be considered and have all been shown to be effective. So it's a sort of a case-by-case basis, but what we're saying, at least in essence, is that by age 6 years, a trait like inattention seems to be one of the strongest predictors of subsequent earnings, independent of traits like hyperactivity and aggression and opposition.
What were the earnings differences in between the two groups of the higher and the lower ends of these?
So when we split them, we split each behavior into four quarters. So the lowest, second lowest, third lowest, and then the highest. And we found there's roughly a $17,000 difference in earnings per annum for those children. So the kids with the lowest levels of attention earn $17,000 less than the kids with the highest levels.
As this new information comes from the research here that's been now ongoing for 30 years, are there more questions? What would you like to answer now? What would you like to be the focus of research now involving this topic?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a couple of things. One is this, and it's a limitation of the study that's important to highlight. It focuses on boys from low-income backgrounds, and so we need to conduct further research, which is currently ongoing, that includes population-wide samples of boys and girls. And so that's critical. So we need to see whether these findings generalize to girls as well, to women. Right. Another thing we want to work on is to try to understand the mechanisms or the pathways through which these effects occur. So a study like this is an association study. We just say that there's an association between the behaviors at age 6 and subsequent earnings. But it doesn't mean the behaviors at age 6 cause higher or lower earnings. There's all kinds of events that could have occurred from age 6 onwards up to age 35, 36. And that includes things like how the kids get on with their peers, how well they perform at school, whether they get a high school and university education. And so we want to try to unpack that a little bit and look at the kinds of factors that what we call in research the mediating factors that explain the relationship between behavior at age 6 and earnings at age 36.
All right. Francis, thank you very much for being with us this morning. Good information. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Francis Vergenst, a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Montreal in the research unit on children's psychological maladjustment. We will post a link to the study information with the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning. Again, we apologize for our technical difficulties getting that interview on the air.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we have a holiday today for U.S. stocks. The U.S. stock market closed, but markets are still open around the world. In London, lower by about 0.25%. In Germany, off by about 0.25%. In France, up just a fraction. Asian markets are going to end the day in the green, and in a good way, in a positive way, nearly 2% in Japan. More than 2% with the Shanghai and with the Hang Seng, nearly 2%. So a good day overseas in terms of stocks, and oil is up this morning as well at 55.83. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News Tech Trends, a new kind of ferry could be headed for the San Francisco Bay. We've all heard of hovercraft. The technology isn't new. It actually dates back to the 50s. It's long been considered too noisy and too expensive. But John Grubb with the Bay Area Council says a hover ferry might be just what San Francisco needs.
It's a lot like riding on a ferry boat, but there's less of that up and down kind of stuff. It's a little bit more of a jiggle, but it's a very similar experience.
Except these new watercraft are quieter than those in decades past, which is good for marine life, and they're up to 30% faster than the catamaran ferries currently operating on the bay.
Hovercraft just go straight up onto the shore, either onto a concrete landing. They can even land on a beach.
Matt Rice, a hovercraft owner, says the idea makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun for people to get to work every morning and be like, yeah, you know, just got here, but already ridden on a hovercraft today.
With Tech Trends, I'm Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. In Germany, the government there is unveiling a new app that will let people use public transport, rental bikes, car sharing, and taxi seamlessly to travel through the German capital. The app started today and is the work of a Lithuanian startup called Traffy and is already in use under different names in different places. Berlin will be one of the first major European capitals to get access to the level 3 app that requires only a single sign-up to use all of those services with billing handled centrally. Berlin's aging transport system, a maze of underground lines, trams, buses, and light rail, straining under the weight of the city's growth. This new technology is aimed at perhaps helping that a little bit. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, February 18th. Again, it's a holiday today, a light day in terms of economic reports. Nothing really on the calendar today. As we look through the week, the housing market for February will lead off the economic reports tomorrow. Minutes of the Federal Open Market Committee, a January meeting will be out on Wednesday. Thursday will be a very busy day with leading indicators, durable goods orders, existing home sales, and the weekly jobless report. All due. Again, that's on Thursday. So we'll be watching the things that could move the market all week long here on 720 WGN.